Welcome to the podcast where heavy industrial industries meet the venture capital ecosystem, interviewing both thought-leading investors and pioneering founders to better understand the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead for digital industrial innovation. Your host is Ty Finley, and this is the Heavy Hitters Podcast.
Katie Ray joins us today from Boston. Katie is the founding CEO and managing partner of The Engine, a venture capital fund focused on tough tech, transformative technology that solves the world's most important challenges through the convergence of breakthrough science, engineering, and leadership. Before joining The Engine, she was the chairman of Techstars Boston and also co-founded the Startup Institute. Katie was an early investor and serves as a board member for a number of rising stars in the tough tech ecosystem, including Boston Metal, Commonwealth Fusion Systems, Form Energy, Sublime Systems, and Via Separations. Katie, really warm welcome to the Heavy Hitters, The Engine, a key ecosystem node driving a lot of industrial innovation forward. And I appreciate Sue getting us together. So thank you for jumping on, Katie.
So nice to be here. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, I always give the short summary, but much more color behind those stories. Walk us through more of that background and that journey that led you to becoming the founding CEO of The Engine.
Yeah, I mean, just I spent 20 years being an operator in a whole bunch of different companies. And then, you know, during that time started angel investing and really working side by side with many, many founders, which led me to the side of being an investor and learned the ropes from Brad Feld, who runs a venture fund called the Foundry Group, and led Techstars Boston here and, you know, cut my teeth on putting portfolios together and working with many, many founders. I think my journey really is about the human beings that drive value creation and positive change in the world. And so when The Engine got founded, that is really that it spun out of MIT. And when they sought a leader, somebody that could run a venture fund, but also lead a larger mission, you know, our management company is a public benefit corp. I think a bunch of people pointed them to me. And when I think about what is The Engine, what we are up to, and the reason this even needed to exist, is that for many of what we call our tough tech companies, these are breakthroughs that come out of science and engineering labs around the world, but have a different commercialization path than, say, software or straight pharmaceuticals. And so what we put together was a venture capital fund and an organization that could speed the path, that could give a community, a deeply bonded community, that was learning how to create tough tech ventures that would then become, you know, companies that could have global impact. And so we started a little over 6 years ago doing The Engine, and we look at areas that are going to have the biggest impact. And so, of course, there's a bunch in clean energy or energy transition, mitigation. Then you also look at the effects of convergence of how is health changing, how is agriculture changing, and then all the systems that support companies like this, what we call advanced systems. So those are the areas we look at. We look at early rising leaders that could lead these companies into the future and create the change we want to see.
Well, they're very fortunate to have you. All of my friends in the ecosystem overlap with you. Clearly someone that has helped build the Boston tech ecosystem to where it is, and love the preview of what you guys are doing at The Engine. Maybe as just a little bit additional context to set up from an investment profile, when you're looking at these tough tech founders and companies, what are you looking for in terms of fund construction, just in case anyone is looking to raise capital from you guys?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, we typically do 25 to 30 investments per fund, and we play in the early stages. So kind of pre-seed to A round, we typically lead the round. And what we're looking for is incredible leadership potential, a very differentiated idea. So typically some kind of breakthrough that is coming out of a lab, and we're looking for somebody who understands the mission they're on. What do they want to change in the world, and why do they want to change it? Because that deep motivation is important. And then I will say the next important thing is, how do they imagine the possible ways this becomes an important business? Because of course, you know, creating a very large business is at the heart of this. And that is how you get the impact and change you want. And it's how you actually get the investors you need to do it.
Absolutely. And you referenced ecosystem earlier. You have built a quite an impressive ecosystem, public and private, we're going to talk about during the podcast. So can't wait to jump in on that. So maybe kicking us off though, in December, your team released the latest annual iteration of what you guys called the Engine Report. And I certainly will link this in the show comments. It's a fantastic read. And it had funding data showing that in 2022, we saw a small decrease in invested venture capital compared to the extreme high of 2021, although it was still tracking higher than 2020 venture dollars. But what was really notable was looking at the five-year CAGR for tough tech specifically compared to all the venture in comparison. And the data showed that for all of venture, the five-year CAGR at the end of 22 was a 19% mark, while the tough tech venture specifically had a five-year CAGR at the end of 22, which was 28%. So all that said, from your point of view, what explains the strength in tough tech's great growth rate there, investing compared to the broader venture capital market? And what do you expect to see in 23 for the tough tech trend ahead? And are we going to bring in more investors because of the great trend behind it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've all lived through the last 5 years. And if you look at kind of the trends that have been happening, you have kind of, I would say, three streams of trend. One is COVID happened, and that put a very large kink in all of our supply chains, how the world is connected, and made everybody step back and look at what are these big problems and how are we going to solve them? I think people felt, you know, for the first time in a long time, really scared about the future. I also think this trend on climate change becoming kind of in our face in a way that for many of us who have looked at the data for decades, maybe more than decades, that was obvious. But I think there was an understanding that climate change was here and it was going to transform basically every business on the planet. It was also going to transform human life. How do we grow food? And I think somehow that pause in COVID made it very real to people at almost every level of society. And then the third trend is, however you want to see the world competing or decoupling, there's a lot of words for this, mm-hmm. but I think you had kind of this rise in industrial policy in the US. I mean, we really hadn't had a consistent industrial policy for over 50 years. So I think all of these trends have converged together and really highlighted actually every single aspect of how we think of tough tech, right? And so that meant that I think for the first time, you know, people used to say to me like, oh, I could just sit back, all that tough tech stuff, I don't have to invest into that. I could just do software, the returns are more predictable, et cetera. I started having, you know, many, many people leading global organizations saying, we can no longer sit us on the sidelines around this. We have to figure out how we are going to mitigate climate change or pick any piece of this issue, make our supply chains more resilient, et cetera, or not be so dependent on a single nation. And in each of those trends, you also have some underlying trends that make tough tech more investable today, right? You have the introduction of very powerful software, ML, AI, people have all their words for it. I'm just going to say the power of compute. In looking at, will a hardware system work? You can actually model it in today's world in a way you could never before. Then you also have this other trend, which is that we understand materials better also because of compute power. And those two things actually bring down the cost of tough tech. And so things that looked so much more expensive in the beginning than a software startup or even a pharmaceutical startup now start to kind of come in line with what is able to be venture backed. And so I think that's like that, those are the trends that are happening, which will, I think, drive more dollars into this area. So it's like mission, how the world is going to change, and we know it's going to change, and then the fact that it is becoming less costly to start some of these things.
Yeah, I think that's a great point on the back end of we've watched the software eating the world analogy. Compute got cheaper, you could build software faster, but those same tendencies and the variables you broke out are making the tough tech ecosystem more approachable for founders in more capital efficient manners to start companies faster than ever. Couldn't agree with you there. And I mean, my goodness, if there was ever a time where the supply chain impacts maybe used to be the chief supply chain officer's purview, well, now they're table dinner issues personally for everyone that's impacted by how this all ripples down to the consumer. So I agree. I think there's more attention than ever. And I think we're both well positioned to recruit and wave the flag to bring only more investing dollars and groups into the fold. Which really kind of lends nicely into the next question ahead, going back to this discussion of an ecosystem. So let's talk about adding value into these tough tech companies that are going to tackle these big problems, challenges, opportunities. In my opinion, from my experiences, it does take a village to support them because there are nuances that come with it. And maybe associated to this, in the report, you discuss how critical it is for both the public and private sectors to work together to accelerate early stage companies that are attacking these tough tech pain points. And clearly, you all put that into practice with the Engine companies having raised over, I think the stat was $154 million in public sector funding to date. And that for every dollar raised from the Engine, your portfolio companies have raised an additional $1.22 from the public sector. It's a pretty amazing stat. So whether it's one day you're educating startups on how to leverage new government resources within, say, the Infrastructure Bill, the CHIPS Act, Science Act, or Inflation Reduction Act, or the next day leveraging what you guys have built as a national network of private corporation partnerships. How have you developed this value add, shall I say, engine to support your portfolio company's commercial and fundraising activities? It's quite impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, it's hard work. It takes years and there's lots of layers to it, right? So, but I think, you know, we started from the beginning and our philosophy is this. Find a set of founders that you think could have unbelievably impressive outcomes, and then learn from them in every single way what you could do to clear a path faster to commercialization and scale. And in that exploration, which is kind of how I wake up every single morning, all right, what more can we do? How can we do it faster? How can we learn faster, teach faster? In that, you start to see the layers of networks that you need to put together. And that's all we do. So, and every single sector of our economy is important. So the universities and the incredible brain power and connectivity that's in there, you have to develop that network. Then you have to, I mean, think about corporations and knowledge about how to build tough tech companies that have been around for a lot longer than our companies. You have to build that network because people do want to work together. They want to see good things happen in the world, whether they're economically aligned to it or not. And, you know, what the Engine invests in brings that out. So, and then you look at the government. What does the government want? They want to see new industries born. They want to see economic development. All of that is aligned to what we do. And then more, you know, there's all other sets of groups. There are people that have been there, done that. I'll put it in the mentor category. You need to bring them around because they want to be involved in the next company. So it's, I just think of it as like continuously adding layers where people get back as much as they give, right? I mean, and that generosity and that connectivity helps everybody in their businesses or in their jobs. And it also brings a really great spirit together. And I think that's the key in what we do, right? We always say like, we're the home for tough tech founders, but we also want to be the home for people that love this stuff. They want to see the positive change and be involved in it. And so I think that's the spirit in which we do everything.
Love it. Love and it. There is, as a TechStars alum, the give first mentality is one of the truest statements I've still heard yet in this ecosystem. So completely agree. And also love your comment, right? As someone who spent some time at the Boeing and GEs of the world, there's been a lot of folks, university, public, private, been working on tough tech applications, material science, additive, robotics for a long, long time. But how do we coalesce all these new resources and help some of these earlier stage companies? Again, what you guys have built at the Engine is powerful. And Katie, maybe just a little add on there. Do you have a formal platform team, or how do you control the layering of networks there in a systematic fashion? It seems overwhelming in some regard, but who on the team, or how have you structured the team to really handle that load?
Yes, we really have three parts of our team. One, you know, we run lab space and industrial space so that our companies have a place to build this. Like, we think of it as convergence. So we have a whole team that does that. So they run our labs, they teach people how to use these machines and coordinate getting things faster in fabrication or pilot, et cetera. Then we have a team that works really on our platform, and that is people who work on all different aspects. It might be gatherings, or it might be, you know, how to help our teams market, or how to help our teams fundraise. And then, of course, there's the general partners and fund team that invest and help our companies one-on-one.
Awesome. Amazing structure there. Well, I'll push us ahead here. The Engine describes itself as a public benefit corporation that, I'll quote, aligns our efforts towards material positive impact for the world. So let's chat about how our overlapping interest in the broader tough tech meets industrial application vein can make a sizable impact towards sustainable development across the globe. And so aligned to that, and this is this is probably my favorite chart in the report I mentioned earlier. The Engine chose the United Nations Sustainability Development Goals, UN SDG for anyone with the acronym, as your measurement framework for this topic of making an impact. So could you give us a little more color why you chose that UN framework specifically and how you use it in practice on the investment team to source diligence and ultimately track and measure the impact your portfolio companies are having?
Well, listen, there's no perfect measurement tool, but if you're going to think about what are the global opportunities, are large problems that need to be solved, and then you overlay that with kind of a tough tech piece, right? Because there are problems that are not going to be solved by breakthrough technology, and that's fine. But we just thought it was the most comprehensive view of the changes that need to happen, and a framework that was well accepted globally and that we could use to overlay. You know, when we look at a company, we ask ourselves, like, is it doing something that the world should really care about? And so that was our kind of quick back of the envelope way to start sorting companies. And from there, obviously, it takes a lot more work to decide if you're going to have the impact that rises to the level that we believe is important for the engine. So right in the different areas that we invest into, you have different goals there. And so if you're doing, say, a climate tech company, you are looking at, you know, carbon reduction, you're looking at how quickly these things could get to market, how fast the impact could be, and then how large, right? How enormous of a company could this be? Or if you're looking at a convergence health, something in agriculture, you're looking at the same thing, but it's probably less about carbon reduction and more about how many people could you feed? How fast of an impact would that have on, you know? And so in each of these areas, you've got to get deeper than just that framework. But I think when you overlay the portfolio, you get a sense for the mission we are on, right? Which is very broad and in all of these different convergence areas, right? Because there's no, in tough tech, all these things really do overlap, right? How are you going to reduce energy uses, carbon? How are you going to feed more people? These all interconnect with each other. And we just thought that was the best way to show the interconnectivity.
Yeah, I encourage everyone to check it out. I think it was like 17 different descriptors, and you match. And it's hard on a podcast to talk about an XY axis, but all your portfolio companies and how they're impacting those 17 different UN goals they've put out. It's pretty impressive. And maybe a sub question to this, and you mentioned earlier one of those big trends, Katie, is climate. And so, you know, let's say the word climate, sustainability, ESG, et cetera, descriptors, more mainstream and venture than ever. I mean, lots of folks are now jumping in, which is great. It's drawing more talent, more dollars for founders. You and I both know we love downstream capital to jump in on tough tech. So with this wave of attention, though, what would you like to see more of, or is there anything you'd like to see less of as we see the pendulum swing more in favor of these types of funds popping up?
Yeah, I mean, I think typically the things that are the most helpful in creating the best companies are, you know, funds or organizations that have staying power, that stick to their knitting, that say, this is the stage I'm good at, or this is the kind of capital I provide, and they have a set of accumulated knowledge over many, many years. And so I welcome that. I love that there are funds being developed and coming into market in these areas. It's super important. And what I hope is people stick to their knitting.
Fair enough.
Going.
Fair enough reply. I love it. Okay. Well, at some point in the podcast, Katie, we always love to bring it home to the most important people in this equation, those founders that are in the arena. And so would love any words of wisdom you have for those founders who are either having to go raise venture capital in the current environment and or approaching the engine. And we just love to split it apart simply. Any keys to success for them as they kick it off, or common challenges you've seen repetitive to maybe help them avoid it going in?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the job of a founding team or a executive team that runs one of these companies is not simple. But I think there's a lot of fear that gets instilled in people that are scared for them around, like, oh, it's such a hard fundraising environment and this is going to be impossible. And I think your job as a founder is to push some of that down and really concentrate on what is your story? What is the change you're going to make in the world? How are you going to get there? How is your team the team to do it? And then accumulate evidence over time that you do what you say you're going to do. And I think you want to look for partners on the capital side that support you in that and are there for the long term. And so those are really my only words of wisdom, is like, find great people to work with and keep refining that big story, that big change you want to make, and the evidence that you can do it. And typically people will be fine when that happens, and they will make incredible companies.
And they definitely are. And you're on many of those boards already. Are there any, and you know, there is a recalibration going on, right? Is however we want to define it, whatever's going to happen in 23, we all can get our crystal ball out. Are there any themes popping up where founders think about this carefully? I'm watching round sizes, compress, things of that nature, specific to tough tech that you kind of give them a heads up that, you know, be thinking about as you see the shifting landscape with the capital markets?
Well, I mean, I think if you get so stuck on a single number you must raise, or there is only one path forward, that's always a watch out sign to me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that flexibility of how you might accumulate more evidence or more momentum on how much you have to raise, I think is a really important factor. And that kind of flexible thinking is something that I look for in the very, very beginning, because you're looking for optionality, right? In all these tough tech companies, do you have optionality on what your business model is? Do you have optionality on how you get to market? Do you have optionality on what forms of capital you can take when to get there? And I think that is a very important trait in a CEO, certainly, is that understanding of different paths, along with the stick-to-itiveness of saying, this is the best one, here's why. And I think that is true in an up market and a down market. It's always true. So I think that is the muscle that needs to be developed to grow a big company. And that's as true today as it was in 2021.
Great advice. Absolutely. Well, Katie, we always wrap up here with a little quick hitter section, a little bit of Q&A. So if you're ready, we'll jump right in.
Jump.
All right. Number one thing you're looking for when you're evaluating that founder or co-founder within this tough tech ecosystem. I think you gave a hint earlier.
I mean, I'm looking for big vision, huge stick-to-itiveness, and evidence that they can actually do things in the world.
Three great spot-on points. What's a resource? Could be a book, podcast, blog you'd recommend our audience to follow in this ecosystem. And I will again plug y'all's annual report. People have to check that out. It's fantastic.
Actually, I think the number one resource is other founders that have been there and done it. And I'm happy to connect people.
That is probably the best answer I've ever heard on that question, Katie. Well done. I love that one. One person who should be on the podcast.
Have you had Bob Mumgard on?
I have not. Tell us more about Bob.
He runs Commonwealth Fusion.
Ah, one of the founders that are innovating at hyperspeed here, from what I understand.
That's exactly right.
Right on. And then finally, Katie, the best way for folks to reach out to you if they want to learn more about the engine, et cetera.
All of our stuff is on our website, engine.xyz.
Awesome. We have got lots and lots of tough tech innovation in all the categories you play in, as well as where we spend a lot of our time in industrials. But Katie, thanks for coming on, telling the story, and look forward to finding something to work on with you.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.